Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello, it's the first day of August 2018. Welcome to Africa Link, live from our DW studios in Bonn, Germany. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe. Thank you for joining us on air and on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Coming up, at least two people have been shot dead in Zimbabwe after clashes erupted between opposition supporters and security forces deployed to quell protests.
I am demonstrating because we have not voted for this result.
Why are they delaying with the presidential result? In 2008, they did the same thing.
We are suffering here. Do we need this lesson, Chamisa? Yes. Wow. And you know you want this.
Nigeria's ruling party APC woos are far from over. Senate President Bukola Saraki quits to rejoin the opposition. We will hear from our correspondent there what this means.
Well, the ruling party is, in fact, let's call it this way, they are licking the wounds. Because here we are, we're talking of just about 8 months to elections for a number three man, very important to leave and join opposition is a very great blow.
And South Africa's ruling party, the ANC, announces plans to change the constitution and allow the expropriation of land without compensation.
Yeah, you heard right. We have a lot lined up for you. Stay tuned. But before all that, we hear what has been happening around the world.
I'm Sertan Sanderson with DW News. Zimbabwe's ruling party, ZANU-PF, has reportedly won the most seats in Zimbabwe's first elections since the ousting of former President Robert Mugabe last November. According to Zimbabwe's Electoral Commission, 109 seats in parliament will go to ZANU-PF and 41 seats to the opposition Movement for Democratic Change, the MDC. By Tuesday evening, 58 seats were yet to be declared. However, EU observers have voiced serious concerns about the vote. Hundreds of demonstrators gathered outside the Electoral Commission's headquarters in the capital, Harare, claiming the vote had been tampered with. They were met by riot police and the army, firing water cannon and tear gas. At least two people reportedly died in clashes. Hundreds of police equipped with anti-riot gear have been deployed across Kinshasa, the capital of the Democratic Republic of Congo, as former Vice President Jean-Pierre Bemba returned to the country in time to stand for elections in December.
I will travel to Kinshasa on Wednesday, 1st of August, to perform my political duty and to submit my candidacy as President of the Republic. I will do so as soon as I arrive in Kinshasa.
The 55-year-old former warlord was acquitted of war crimes charges by the International Criminal Court, or ICC, in June, after spending a decade behind bars. Bemba still awaits a final sentencing in a separate case at the ICC for bribing witnesses in his war crimes trial. According to the ruling coalition, this could disqualify Bemba from running for office. You're listening to DW News. A new outbreak of the Ebola virus has been confirmed in eastern parts of the Democratic Republic of Congo, near its border with Uganda. Authorities said they had detected at least 4 cases thus far. This comes just 1 week after the country declared an end to a separate outbreak that killed 33 people in the northwest. In Mali, the political opposition has accused the government of grave violations in the run-up to last Sunday's elections. Katrin Gensler in Bamako has more.
At a press conference in the Malian capital on Wednesday, 18 opposition candidates claimed that some people had picked up voters' cards which didn't belong to them. They also said that ballot boxes were stuffed with fake ballots. The opposition said they would not accept election results that had been affected by these irregularities. Sunday's elections were accompanied by extensive security measures. But shortly afterwards, an army convoy carrying election materials was attacked near Ségou. 4 soldiers and 8 attackers were killed in a shootout.
Germany's 2018 grains harvest will slump at least 20% on the year as a result of massive damage from drought and an ongoing heatwave. The German Farmers Association, DBV, has called for 1 billion euros in special drought aid from the federal government. Berlin would have to declare a state of emergency to enable aid payments to be made. EU benchmark wheat prices have hit 3-year highs in recent days because of worries about crop losses across the bloc. And for more news and information, please log on to dw.com or download our app. I'm Sertan Sanderson.
This is DW's Africa Link program with me, Isaac Mugabe, and we are live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany.
Yeah, you're right, Isaac. And of course, we are live on our Facebook page as well, DW Africa. Just to mention some names there, Jutta Siget and Takuzwa Mathenda, listening to us live. Thank you. Please leave your comments. We start off in Zimbabwe, where at least two people have been confirmed dead in a crackdown by security forces on opposition protesters in Harare.
Violence broke out on the streets as security forces fired live rounds of ammunition against opposition supporters protesting election results that they say were rigged. Tear gas was also fired and armored vehicles were deployed. Our own Columbus Mavunga in Harare has been telling me about the situation there.
I've seen someone lying on the floor. If I were a doctor, I would describe that person as dead because he looked very lifeless. If there's such a thing, he couldn't move, and I think he might have been one of the casualties of this protest. It seems this time around the protesters are not running away from the army, unlike what used to happen in the past, where the moment the army comes in, then they'll run away. But this time around, they are defiant, if you want, which explains why one of them was badly injured, if not killed. I hope the situation gets normal, because we thought we had gone through an election which was peaceful, more peaceful compared to any election that I've covered since 2000. This was the only election where I did not report about any politically related death.
Now, is the situation likely to escalate now that we know there is heavy deployment of both the army and the police? And of course, just like we all know, there have been clashes, serious clashes between protesters and the army. Over to you.
Yes, it is. Before the army and the police came in, I talked to some of them and just take a listen to their demands.
I am demonstrating because we have not voted for this result.
Yes.
We did not vote for this result.
Another issue that we are concerned with is why are they delaying with the presidential result? In 2008, they did the same thing. They delayed the presidential result, manipulated figures. So we are here. We want the presidential result. Then they can continue with everything.
We need result today. We are suffering here. Do we need to listen to Jamisa? Yes.
Wow. And you know he won this election.
Yes.
They are stealing our vote. In Jerez, they said 35,000 people. Here in Mbare, less than 20,000. So we need our vote.
Those are some of the protesters speaking to our correspondent, Columbus Mavunga. Now, Columbus, the European Union Election Observer Mission has expressed serious concerns over the general conduct of the elections. And how has the Electoral Commission reacted to these allegations?
The Electoral Commission issued a statement saying that the election was absolutely not rigged. It was free, credible, transparent, and fair. But the head of the EU Chief Election Officer, Elmar Brok, had this to say about the independence of the Electoral Commission when I was talking to him a little earlier on.
Look, we have the feeling that the influence of the government might be very high, and that it was the interest of the government that certain parts of the preparation process was not so transparent as we hoped to have it.
Elmar Brok, the head of the EU Observer Mission, ending our chat with Columbus Mavunga. Now, Zipporah, things seem to be escalating in Zimbabwe as the comments, you know, keep on flowing on our page. Yeah. For instance,
unfortunately,
Munash Bob says, what is really wrong with African leaders? Does it mean human lives don't really matter when it comes to politics and power, he asks.
Jude Kerwa actually says that's the result of claiming victory before the results are made public. It's common in Africa. We have seen that in Gabon, Kenya, Ivory Coast, Mali, and other places.
And Murungashi in Tanzania says, I'm listening live, and the whole problem, he says, is because of SADC endorsing this whole election.
And Paul Oz actually says this is a reason he's sad, because leaders have failed to provide employment to the young people who in turn use them as political thugs.
And Jutta Siget says, so sad about the developments in Zimbabwe. Keep those comments flowing. And of course, the debate on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Yeah.
Now, deep divisions facing Nigeria's ruling coalition, the All Progressive Party, APC, continued as more prominent politicians resigned from the party. Bukola Saraki, the country's third most senior politician, quit to rejoin his former party, the People's Democratic Party, PDP.
He was not the only one. He was joined by, among others, Aminu Tabuwal, a prominent governor in northern Nigeria who played a key role in Buhari's 2015 win. According to a correspondent in Abuja, Ben Shemang, Saraki cited irreconcilable differences for his decision. But how much of it is it a blow to President Buhari and the ruling APC?
Well, the ruling party is, in fact, let's call it this way, they are licking the wounds. Because here we are, we're talking of just about 8 months to elections for a number three man, very important to leave and join opposition is a very great blow. And usually Bukola Saraki has quite a lot of followership all over the states. And I want to tell you that before now, just last week, many senators who align with him, many lawmakers at the House of Representatives have all resigned to join opposition. So it's a very big blow to the Nigerian president, is a big blow to the ruling All Progressives Congress.
Now, Ben, can you tell us, what do many Nigerians feel about Bukola's decision to leave APC?
I want to tell you, Zipporah, that it is a kind of a divide here. Many are supporting Bukola Saraki because he felt he should support President Buhari in 2015, and he felt a kind of betrayed. He was left behind, uncatered for. And many Nigerians are rather also feeling that he ought to have supported the president, come rain, come shine. So there is a line of divide here.
Saraki held a high post as a Senate president, and he contested for that seat on an APC ticket. Can you tell us if he will now keep his job after quitting the ruling party, APC?
What he did, very tactical too, he has decided to place the Senate and in fact the entire National Assembly, including the House of Representatives, they've gone on break. And before they return till next month, September, around mid-September, so to speak. So whatever or whatever anybody wants to do, they can't do anything without the Senate or the National Assembly sitting. So that is it. He's tactical, he's gone, and he has not told anybody. He cannot be said to be away as the president of Senate. In other words, he still remains the Senate president.
Ben Shemang in Abuja. And one quick comment from there. Chima Uzoka says his defection from the APC to PDP is a welcome development. All hands must be on deck to boot Buhari out.
Thank you very much. We now head to South Africa, where President Cyril Ramaphosa has announced plans to change the country's constitution so farmlands can be seized without compensation.
Yes, indeed. During apartheid, blacks were not allowed to own land, a regulation Ramaphosa described as South Africa's original sin that needed correcting. Tuzo Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Ruling party ANC has said it will submit a proposal to amend the country's constitution and help push through the land reforms. President Ramaphosa says it has become patently clear that the people want the constitution to be more explicit on the land issue.
Accordingly, the ANC will, through the parliamentary process, finalize a proposed amendment to the constitution that outlines more clearly the conditions under which expropriation of land without compensation can be effected.
A parliamentary constitutional review committee has been going countrywide collecting people's views on whether they support a constitutional amendment to allow land expropriation without compensation. Although it's yet to conclude its hearings, Bulelo Mabasa, a land reform specialist, says the ANC has found itself between a stone and a hard rock, forcing it to show it is in charge.
It's become quite clear that the president has been listening to the public hearings that have been happening across the country. The prevailing voice in the public is that there is a need to explicitly make room for expropriation without compensation to take place.
Since 1994, the ANC administration has redistributed land through the willing buyer, willing seller principle, but this has dismally failed, with only 8% of land redistributed so far. Government statistics show that only 7.2% of land is under the ownership of the black majority. In contrast, the white minority own at least 23% of the rural land and 11% of the urban land. With national elections approaching next year and the land issue having become a big election issue, analysts say the ANC's latest move could bring those hungry for land on its side.
Tuzokumalo reporting. Zipporah, land issues is a big factor everywhere in Africa. And of course, the economic freedom fighters of Julius Malema must be smiling.
Even in Kenya, it's an issue. I think it's an issue everywhere.
I know, they're still struggling with their past. And of course, you know, keep the debate flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Welcome back to the program. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. And once again, thank you to all our listeners on our Facebook page, DW Africa. I cannot mention all your names, Igwe Donald, Joshua Tenley, and Obem for Boat. Thank you very much. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, we will be hearing how Ghana's movie industry wants to change its name from Gollywood to Gollywood.
I think it's utter nonsense to change the name of our movie industry into Gollywood. It means we are just copying the West.
For me personally, I feel there is a trend of having to follow what Hollywood is.
Zipporah, can a name really make a difference and propel Ghana's actors and actresses to the stardom beyond their borders? I'm just wondering.
That's the question, Isaac. But we will find out later in the report. For our listeners, stay tuned as well. But first, let's go to Zamfara State in northern Nigeria, where insecurity is escalating in with daily killings and kidnappings by armed bandits, leaving villagers in constant fear of attack. Thousands of people have been displaced by a conflict which began in 2012 as a result of clashes between farmers and herders. Villagers described a pattern where they receive warnings ahead of the attacks, including by phone, ordering them to pay huge sums of money or be killed or abducted.
And recently, President Muhammadu Buhari announced the deployment of 1,000 troops to Zamfara, the third time since November last year that the authorities have deployed the military in response to attacks. But villagers told our contributor Zahraddin Umar that this has not translated into protection for remote, vulnerable communities.
This is a village square in Zurmi town, Zamfara State in northern Nigeria. Locals are discussing recent security threat in the area in order to stay safe. Murtala Muhammad, a resident of Zurmi, told me that 16 villages have been deserted so far.
Some cattle rustlers are distributing letters requesting villagers to pay certain amount of money in order to avoid being attacked. Failure to comply with their directives means that they will end up losing property and probably lives as well.
Umaru Mani, a father of 10, left his home after the bandit attacked his village.
They did not ask us to give them money, and even if they did, nobody will give them money because we don't have it. We stopped going to farms as a result of their atrocities, so we don't have money. Some of us who had some valuables had to leave their belongings in the village for fear of the unknown.
Halima Ayuba, a mother of 8, lost her husband in one of the attacks. Her solace remains now in the children who play around her homestead. She is bitter with the government for not providing security.
Even if the attackers served us with a notice, there was nothing we could do to protect ourselves because we thought the government would do that for us. These bandits came with more than 50 guns. We couldn't help ourselves because we don't have any weapons to fight back. We now believe our government doesn't value our lives.
Human rights activists are concerned with the deteriorating situation in Zamfara State because this is not the first time that threatening letters are sent. Suleiman Shuaibu is one of them who thinks the federal government needs to do more to protect its people and property.
The government of Zamfara State has failed the masses. Even the federal government failed the masses of Zamfara State. It is unacceptable. The situation in Zamfara is more than any other situation in the world.
For now, residents of Zurmi town can only hope authorities of Zamfara State listen to their pleas and provide security to avoid further displacement of people.
Many thanks to Zahraddin Omal for that report. Now, Zippy, I'm just wondering, imagine someone calling you and says, prepare for me such an amount of money. I'm coming for it tomorrow. And if not...
Isaac, this is really tragic. Like, if you don't have the money, you risk losing one of your family members. I think that is one state of insecurity.
And the sad part of it is that these bandits also rape women and young, you know, young girls, as you've heard in that report. First of all, these communities, they don't have the money even to pay for that ransom. And it's the third time that the president, Muhammadu Buhari, has deployed 1,000 troops to Zamfara. But do they really get to the remote communities?
That is a question. What have they doing?
Tell us what you think about whether security is being, you know, beefed up in Zamfara state. And in case you're there, you can, you know, send us, you know, your audio on our WhatsApp number and or on our page. Just keep it a bit flowing. We'll be back. We still have much more right after this.
On the spot.
Now, away from politics, let's talk about some movies, isn't it, Zipporah?
I'm looking forward.
Yeah, most of us certainly know or have heard about Nollywood, the famous Nigerian movies. It's clear from its growth the past years that African film industry is booming despite the many challenges it continues to face, mainly due to piracy and lack of funds.
In Ghana, the film industry faces similar problems, not forgetting the influx of Western movies. So, could the change of name from Gollywood to Gollywood do the magic? At least that is what the film industry thinks. But according to our correspondent in Accra, Isaac Kalechi, many are divided on the name change.
Please don't remind me of her. I don't understand why she spared my thoughts thinking about somebody that doesn't even care about us.
Don't say that.
31-year-old Nanama is watching her favorite Ghanaian movie on a local TV channel. For Ama, the question on where or who produced the film is not relevant.
It's a Ghanaian movie that I'm just watching for entertainment. I don't have time for that, as in whether it's coming from A or B. So far as I get my entertainment from there, and I enjoy the movie that I'm watching, I'm cool with it. It's only the comedy side that I like. Aside that, there's nothing much.
But that's not what the Ghanaian film industry managers think. They want people to know where the movie is coming from, which makes its name important. They are now on a mission to rebrand it.
Sorry, how can I help you?
Your door, it's in my way.
Oh, I'm sorry.
For many years, the movie industry here was called Gollywood, a name derived from the American brand name Hollywood, just like Nollywood for Nigerians. But at a local film summit recently, the name was changed from Gollywood to Gollywood. Film analyst Obed Wafu has defended the move, which he says will make the industry attractive once again.
There are lots of independent video producers who have gone out of market. Some have more or less like abandoned ship. They are now taking up some private jobs outside their core movie calling. So it speaks volumes of the issues that we are facing as a country with regards to our movie industry.
Reactions to the new name have not been positive, as I found out on the streets of Accra from these film lovers.
I think it's utter nonsense to change the name of our movie industry into Gollywood. It means we are just copying the West. It's as simple as that. It doesn't show of creativity.
I'm not sure what went into the name changing. I'm sure maybe perhaps they thought of rebranding and all of that. But for me personally, I feel there is a trend of having to follow what Hollywood is.
Some Ghanaians, like Emmanuel Bipu, however, support the rebranding, which they say could be magical.
I have no problem with the name Gollywood. Before you sell anything, you need an identity. So as it stands now, there are people elsewhere, especially Ghanaians in the diaspora, who think that even every Ghanaian movie, they classify it as Nollywood. They think everything is coming from Nigeria. So we need an identity. So I think the name is okay.
Film analyst Wafo says the name change to Gollywood is a case of misplaced priorities by the stakeholders who should be focusing on big problems facing the industry.
The issues facing the Ghana movie industry go beyond just labeling, you know, and the naming or giving it a name and saying that, oh, this is what we want to go with. There are far bigger issues, you know, issues with copyright, issues with distribution, issues with marketing, issues with piracy.
For many local movie lovers like Nanama, it is clear the change of name is of no consequence. What they simply want is good quality films.
Isaac, I'll let you with that report. Now, Isaac, you're asking, what is in a name? A name is everything.
That's the big question. Gollywood, Gollywood, Nollywood. In Kenya, how do you call it, by the way?
I think it's called Kellywood. Kellywood. Well, all of them have wood.
Well, at home, because we call it the land of a thousand hills, it's Hillywood. But what are those woods anyway? If you have a better opinion, more than Zippy and I in the studios, just go on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and tell us the woods that you prefer. We'll be back right after this.
Living Planet Africa.
Snake bites continue to pose a serious threat, especially in the tropics and sub-Saharan. At least 500,000 people are left with permanent blindness and disabilities due to snake bites and their spittle. That's according to the World Health Organization.
Yes, indeed. It is against that background that WHO declared snake bite and venom as one of the neglected tropical diseases. DW's contributor Telma Mwadzaya has been finding out how big a threat snake bites pose in the same arid coastal areas of southern Kenya.
I'm in Kinango Town in Kwale County in southern Kenya. It's bustling with activity as construction of new roads and buildings is ongoing. A few paces from the main hospital stands a metallic shack that Rebecca Mwakadunyo uses as a hairdressing salon. There, crutches leaned up against the wall, and when Rebecca starts to move, you realize she only has one leg. She recalls a fateful evening several years ago.
My leg was amputated as a result of a snake bite. I was bitten when I was about 6. Local people tried to help me, but I lost consciousness as the poison took effect. The leg was rotting from the ankle joint all the way up. It was infested with maggots up to the knee area, which they tried to save, but in the end, they had to amputate it.
Simon Nyanje is a health information professional in the Kinango area.
There is an increase in number of snake bites in the region, Kinango region. I think this is due to the vastity of the area and the bushy. We have a lot of wild animals, snakes being one of them. So there have been an incentive from the Kenya Wildlife for anyone who was bitten by snake, there is compensation. Only after you have reported to a health facility and they are being identified as a snake bite and you report to the police, you get a P3, then the Kenya Wildlife is going to compensate you.
There are 12 types of venomous snakes in Kenya, among them the cobra, puff adder, and black mamba. A bite from a puff adder is among the deadliest. Snakes come out in search of food in greater numbers, especially at the start of the rainy season. Hard-to-reach areas pose a real challenge, as the antidote has to be administered quickly to someone who has been bitten by a venomous snake. In May this year, the World Health Assembly gave the World Health Organization the go-ahead to develop a comprehensive plan to help countries improve access to effective treatment for people who get bitten by venomous snakes. Dr. Winnie Bore runs a non-governmental organization, SNARBIC, a snake bite rescue rehabilitation and research center in Baringo. She told me not all hospitals are equipped to deal with snake bites.
Dawa ya nyoka ya sumu ipo ijapokuwa hipo.
Antivenom is available, but not in all hospitals. It is possible to see an area with a snake bite problem not having the required antivenom because they did not budget for it.
Nyoka ambayo inapatikana kwa sehemu fulani.
Dr. Sultan Matendechero is the head of the Neglected Tropical Diseases Unit at Kenya's Health Ministry and a member of the Snake Bite Task Force.
Tunajaribu kuweka mikakati ya kuhakikisha.
We are trying to formulate a policy that will ensure anti-venom is available. As a government, we have seen the gaps and we want to ensure that it is available wherever it is needed. We are in the process of mapping out areas prone to snakes so as to establish the varied types in different areas.
Aina fulani zinapatikana kwa sehemu fulani.
As I left Kinango Town, I saw a dead puff adder which had been run over by a vehicle, a clear indication that the enemy is always lurking.
That's our reporter, Telma Mwazaya. And now we go back to Nigeria, where President Muhammadu Buhari has been elected the chair of ECOWAS. Of course, we have got a lot of feedback. John Loko Kwabula said ECOWAS is sick. Whether he becomes chairman of ECOWAS or not, he will still lose the 2019 presidential election. And this goes on to say, Isaac, in the city of the blinds, the one-eyed man is the king.
I tell you. And Mark Rintep says, hell no, he's just incompetent to handle anything. He'll probably crush everything, just as he did with Nigeria. I think, Zippy, we have to wind up from here. On behalf of the wonderful production crew behind there and the rest of the Africa Link team, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura.
Bye for now.